This is May the 5th. I have a fast rundown here on the processes which you will find the most efficacious as of this time, and just give you a very quick resume of these processes. First, in its most applicable form, Scientology directs the attention of the preclear to bring the preclear into an ability to direct his attention. The auditor directs the attention of the preclear so that the preclear can then inherit sooner or later the ability to direct his attention. If you wanted to make a clean statement of what auditing did, well, that's what it does. Now, let's say that your preclear has his attention stuck on a particular point. Naturally, an auditor would use processes which would either get the preclear's attention off of that point or subject and onto something else, or he would simply free up attention in general. So he has two choices. He can be very specific, or he can just free up general attention. One of the best methods of freeing up general attention is simply to increase the preclear's tolerance of viewpoint. Every time you increase the preclear's tolerance of viewpoint, you, of course, increase his ability to command and control his attention. There is a subject known as attention span, and this whole subject could very well be studied now. What is a person's attention span? In other words, how long can he look at something without being drawn into it or repelled from it? That would tell you how well he could control energy masses. Attention span would be the ability then to control energy masses, and would deteriorate as and in the ratio that a person became unable to control masses. And when I say masses, I could say fluid energies or objects. Attention span or concentration develops two things, two categories. One is, of course, self-determined, and the other is other-determined. An individual goes over the first hump of deterioration when he passes from self-determined control of his own attention to other-determined control of his own attention. And having passed that point, he will then invert several times. That is to say, he'll come back into a possession of some control of his own attention, and then he will slop off into other control of his attention and back and forth until actually everything demands that he fix his attention upon it. This condition is manifest in a preclear when the preclear, for instance, looks at an object and the object seems to come close to him. The object is compelling his attention. Now, compulsion of attention results in a shortening of distance. And you want to know, what is this thing, contraction of space? Contraction of space then is only a manifestation of this compulsive attention. And again, we get back to an optimum state of controlled attention. An individual can control his attention. Now, an individual who is sitting there waiting for an effect, which is a chronic state with preclears that you're having trouble with, whether you were sitting there waiting for an effect, are simply waiting for something else to shift their attention. And you see this clearly, something else to shift their attention. They are very dependent upon other determinism changing their direction or intensity of attention. And this is, in the final analysis, the really entire mechanic of auditing. You want to make a very simple statement that you can then use many times? That would be it. Now, what if we just took this as a definition, processed it? We could do something like this. We could tell preclear, please, attention on the bulletin board. Now, take it off the bulletin board and put it on the wall, and take his attention off the wall and put it on the ceiling, and take it off the ceiling and put it on the nothingness in the center of the room, and then put it on the floor, and then put it on the back of his head, and you're liable to find him exteriorized right there. An individual, when he first begins to handle attention, finds it to be possessed of tonnage. It's heavy. That is the introduction of gravity into the masses he's handling. Gravity, or heaviness, or co-attractiveness of masses, gravity, you know, it's just the co-attraction of masses, is a consideration, and an individual considers that something is very heavy or massive or gravitic, and thereafter is affected by gravity. You can almost affect an automatic, that is to say, an uncontrolled levitation on the part of the preclear by simply stripping out all consideration of mass, which we know as gravity. Gravity is consideration of the attraction of masses. And if we stripped all that out of the case, why, you could fully expect something weird to happen with regard to his body. He would at least feel that it was going to float right straight out of a chair. And people who can handle their bodies and levitate and pull them into centers of the room off the floor with no further support or anything like that, people who can do that simply have either resolved the problem of gravity, the co-attraction of masses, or they haven't resolved this problem. Well, of course, co-attraction of masses gets us immediately back to a consideration of attention. An individual wants his attention to be compelling and wants his attention to be compelled. And the harder he wants it to be compelling and the more he wants it to be compelled, the more gravity will occur in the case. Now, this is actually measurable upon a scale. You can change the consideration of gravity in the preclear and change the weight he has on a Toledo scale. I mean, we're going at highly mensurable commodities here. We don't have to guess about these things. We process out the gravity from preclear and we find out the preclear's lighter. We put some gravity and consideration into him and we find out he's heavier. It's almost that simple. Now, individuals who are customarily engaged in sports or work in the control of heavy masses will naturally concentrate a great deal upon weights and the controls of masses. And so they will become, after a while, themselves rather heavy or massive. Now, this is not particularly bad, you understand, or good, or one thing or the other. The only thing that would be bad or good about it was whether the individual knew he was controlling weights. See, he knew there was weight there to be controlled and he was handling it. This might seem to you to be too great a simplicity, but let's take the question of a machinist who is concentrating continually upon an enormous lathe. And yet his concentration is not upon the mass of this lathe at all. He doesn't ever consider the mass of the lathe. He only considers his product, the intricacies of this thing he is machining. He's thinking of the planning on this. And one day you pick him up, and oh, is he having trouble? He's having trouble with havingness. Well, he was standing there actually paying attention to and forcefully ignoring a several ton mass in front of him. And it eventually showed up in his case very compulsively because it was demanding his attention and he wasn't giving it. As a net result, his concentration of attention being denied, he would have the tendency to look at life as though he were a lathe. What would happen here? In view of the fact that we had pressure, gravity, you might say, from the lathe to him, and no consideration, as far as he was concerned, of gravity from himself to the lathe. In other words, he didn't take this into his computation at all. We could expect him then to align with the highest pressure flow. Reverse valences. And this is the basic mechanism of the winning valence. It's a matter of masses. First a matter, of course, of consideration, and then a matter of masses. So we find machinists going around looking like their machines, acting like their machines. We find railroad engineers, for instance, looking and acting like their locomotives. We find writers looking and acting like their typewriters. And we discover machine gunners, of course, being either the machine gun or what? The mass of the enemy. What is the biggest mass here? And a person will eventually, by denying something attention, create a vacuum for attention and sort of pop into it. Well, all these things are basically considerations, and nothing is more easily demonstrated than this. If you can, by changing a person's mind, change his weight, And if you could measure this directly, I think you would consider that you had solved the problem of which was senior, the postulate or the physical universe. I think you wouldn't have any more difficulty with that problem, you said. Ideas are senior to masses. And so it is in every case. Well, an individual's consideration, then, is what the auditor's trying to change. And if an individual considers that he must keep his attention fixed upon something, why, of course, he will continue to fix his attention on something, no matter how much you handle the mass on which his attention is fixed. How could you do this? Let's say this individual had put his attention consistently and continually upon a high mountain, and had put it on this high mountain to a point where he considered that a mountain of that character demanded of him this many ergs, you might say, of attention flow. How many ergs of attention flow are required to concentrate on one mountain? Now, if you were to gradually get him to associate any rock with this mountain, eventually he would give any rock as much attention flow as he'd give to the mountain. And then, if you got him to closely associate or identify a grain of sand with any rock, you would eventually have him giving every grain of sand the same attention which he gave to this enormous mountain. And so, an individual who is rather bad off has a tendency to regard every grain of sand as a mountain in terms of mass. Now, I don't mean that as a philosophic quip. I mean literally, actually measurable with springs and balances. An individual who is bad off considers every grain of sand to have the mass of a mountain. It has the weight of a mountain and therefore demands and requires the enormous concentration that would ordinarily be given only to a mountain. And his thought pattern behaves this way, and you see a secondary manifestation of this, is anything that happens in his life demands an enormous amount of attention. The various races have various cliches to characterize this. The American says the mountain out of a molehill, and so forth. These cliches could be summed up to be, he makes mountains out of grains of sand. And the worries in his life will be such that should somebody come along and point out to him that the postage stamp was upside down on a letter he was about to mail, his inability to remove the postage stamp and write it, making it right side up, would amount to so much attention that it would probably persist for several hours afterwards, certainly several minutes. The individual's persistence upon any given subject on a self-determined basis would be his level of ability. In other words, the persistence, the self-determined persistence on any subject would have a tendency to measure his ability, you see. Consistency, persistency. As long as that's self-determined, it measures his ability. But now, other determined persistence on any subject would measure his disability, other determined persistence. And the degree that that persistence continues is a measure of how much this individual is going to, quote, worry, be afraid, be upset, hit the top of the curve and not be able to get off of it, you know, that survive point. To get into traps and not be able to get out of them. All of this is another determined persistence. Other determined persistence. Persistence, there's nothing wrong with persistence. Persistence is a very good thing, as long as it's in a self-determined category. When it's in a continuously other determined category, persistence winds up into what you find as aberration. Other determined persistence, aberration, are interchangeable phrases. You could interchange the word aberration with other determined persistence. Now, what do you mean by other determined persistence? That would mean that the individual persists only so long as another determinism demands that he persists. And so we get, as an example, the condition of the worker who continually needs supervision. He cannot work on his own supervision. As long as he's being hounded by a foreman, he will continue to shovel. And the moment the foreman disappears, he no longer shovels. Now, let's look at this as a problem in another determinism. You see that? He's being run by an exterior determinism. In other words, all the persistence in his life derives and stems from another determinism or other determinisms rather than his own. You start auditing this person, and this person will bird dog, watch, fixate upon energy masses in his vicinity, and wait for them to tell him when to stop persisting. And so you get an individual's fixation upon erasure, or wipe it out, or run the concept out, or strip it down, or reduce it in some fashion or another, because he has to keep his attention upon the energy mass as long as the energy mass keeps its attention upon him. So the only thing we could do, naturally, would be to run the energy mass out, down, wipe it out, so that it could no longer have a compulsion on the individual. This is not what is wrong with the individual, that he has energy masses which compel him. That is not what is wrong with an individual. That an individual has energy masses which compel him is not what is wrong with the individual. I make this very, very clear. It's the individual's consideration that energy masses can compel him that is wrong with the individual. You see, if the first were what was wrong with an individual, in order to be clear or be able, a person would have to abstain from every possible kind of energy mass. Therefore, he could not maintain his stability. The person who interiorizes after having been exteriorized has been audited in the direction that those energy masses which are compelling him at the moment have been desensitized. And as long as they remain desensitized, no new energy masses show up, the individual remains exterior. The moment new energy masses show up, he's going to interiorize because the auditing gave its total attention on desensitizing the energy masses themselves. As long as it was concentrated upon that, you had an instability enter into a case. The auditing should have been and should be directed toward changing the consideration of an individual on the subject of attention, gravity, masses, energy, objects, forms, ideas. Changing his mind, changing his consideration, altering his consideration is a goal. The alteration of consideration is a goal which the auditor can well undertake and well accomplish using modern processes. The alteration of an energy mass is something that no auditor is ever going to accomplish, not until the end of time. An auditor is not going to be able to take one human being and so desensitize every energy mass with which this individual will be in conversance that the individual can then be free. This has a parallel in the business of living. It is all very well for you to take a stockade of prisoners who have long been in a prison and simply remove the prison fence. It's all very well for you to do that. But do you know what the prisoners will do? Their consideration is that they are prisoners, that they are imprisoned. They will build themselves a new prison fence. You can put that to test if you want to. You can go out here and demonstrate to people that certain practices they have are very unhealthy for them and unhealthy for the society, and a greater, higher level of freedom is only attained by the destruction of some of those barriers which resist them in the progress of living. And you yourself, like Hercules, could destroy those barriers. And then if you went away and had a nice, quiet sleep on a mountaintop someplace for a year or two and then returned, you would find that these people had carefully built back barriers and resistances for themselves to use as a pen. There is the heartbreak of an auditor, and the only place where he can experience heartbreak is that those barriers which he have stripped away have been substituted for anew by the preclear. Psychology and psychotherapy of the 19th century recognized this and called it sublimation. But they didn't recognize this intelligently. They merely recognized it to this degree. Anytime we try, of course, they were all in apathy. Anytime we ever try to make anybody well, why, he just finds something else to be sick about. And there's no reason to make anybody well then, because he'll just find something else. And let's all give up. Let's die. Let's die. Let's die. Which was the highest tone ever attained by that particular science. Anyway. I hope someday that we will get powerful enough to die. That was its tone. Well, if this was the case, then what were these people doing? They were actually taking upon their own shoulders the removal of certain barriers from the patient. The practitioner was the one who was getting in there like Hercules and hewing away with an axe to remove certain barriers. And of course, having removed these barriers, having taken away these energy masses, having desensitized these energy masses, he would only discover, to his sorrow, that the individual had simply erected new masses, new resistances. He cures somebody of a dermatitis and finds out now that the fellow has developed a severe earache. And having cured him of an earache, he finds out that the individual has now come out with an enormous rash of ingrowing toenails. But this gets to a point where the practitioner, who does not understand the principles I'm telling you about, it gets to a point where he'll believe firmly that there is no freeing of a human being. He'll believe this firmly. He'll go around saying, well, he just wants to be sick and there's nothing you can do for him, so forth. Anything you do for a human being which is effective consists of altering the human being's consideration of spaces, masses, ideas, forms, perceptions, colors. You alter his consideration and you've altered the human being. Now sometimes he is so overpowered by masses with which he is surrounded that the reduction of the charge in these masses can be undertaken with some profit. An individual who is suffering enormously from a migraine headache is not easy to audit. So we might, just to get him into a position where he could be audited, we might address the migraine headache as an energy mass which is exerting a compulsive influence, a compulsive attention upon the preclear. It's an unwanted attention of some sort. It is a mass which is exerting an attention upon the preclear. And we would then use some process to alter this energy mass so that it would no longer be able to do this. There'd be many ways you could do that. You could simply duplicate it enough times, or put the pain in the walls enough times, or give it enough new headaches, you know, remedy its havingness and headaches, until the tension of it was gone. You could do this rather easily. It would, by the way, probably stay away. But now do not expect your preclear to remain in a state of beingness which can do without headaches. He can't do without headaches. What you did was just with malice aforethought threw away the headaches. You didn't make him able to handle headaches particularly. And you didn't alter his consideration about headaches. You did something else. You handled the headache. Of course, he was doing it, and he was putting that sort of thing up, but he didn't know what he was doing. He wouldn't be able to do it again on a bet. If he came around and told you what you had done to him a few weeks later, it would be the most altered picture you ever wanted to observe. Well, here is your miracle level of treatment. When it is done rapidly, the auditor has altered a mass. However he did it, we don't care. Maybe he did it by putting his own mock-ups into the person's leg. You know, you can do that too. It doesn't matter how he did it, he accomplished a change in the physical characteristics of the individual. Now get this. He didn't accomplish a change in the mental characteristics of the individual, save to the degree that he impressed the individual that he'd been in effect. This individual might have felt much happier. You see, you'd changed the mind of a prisoner that you rushed up to with a reprieve while he was just walking onto the execution platform. You'd sure change his mind and his outlook and existence, you see. However, you wouldn't change any of his basic problems as his consideration for existence. That's why people who reprieve criminals are very often quite upset later on to find the criminals murdering somebody else, you know, and getting reprieved again. And then they murder somebody else and get reprieved again. This would be the lot of a member of a parole board who had no command of the science of Scientology. He would find himself releasing onto the world, being merciful, and releasing onto the world these criminals continually, one after the other, and then finding them right back in prison again. And he spends his time and mercy in releasing them, and they spend all their time in trying to get back into prison again. And he finally says, "Row." He becomes upset about this, and he doesn't want to parole anybody else. And parole systems start to go to pieces, and nonsense enters into a field into which it's impossible to enter further nonsense than currently exists, which is penal systems. Therefore, the address to the physical self of the preclear will always find the auditor in a position of having altered consideration of masses toward the preclear, rather than in the desirable position of having altered the preclear's consideration toward masses. So a physical address to the preclear, whether with auditing, medicine, or any other field, will result in a very minor alteration in the ability, concentration span, and other factors of the preclear or of the patient. The only gains made by an auditor, a practitioner, or anyone else come about when the basic consideration of the being toward masses, spaces, ideas, forms, when that basic consideration is itself altered. If you don't change his mind, you don't change the case. Now, this gets down into great complexities. Gets into the complexities of masses and co-attractions of masses. But it doesn't become more untrue simply because it becomes more complex that a preclear who does not have his mind changed, his attitude, his consideration changed, is not himself changed, even vaguely. He's not changed. Therefore, if the preclear expects you as an auditor to do everything for the preclear, your basic job is to get the preclear to do something for himself and make him change his mind about being able to do something for himself. And he will gradually shake out of his consideration of masses. His attention span and his ability will go up, and he will be able to perform without direction those things which he can perform early in auditing only with direction. Okay, give you a resume now of the effective processes. An individual who does not tolerate various viewpoints has abandoned his ability to handle his attention in connection with those subjects. You see, if an individual can't tolerate certain viewpoints, then he has abandoned his right to handle attention with regard to these subjects. You see that? He has moved out of a lot of spaces, in other words. He has moved away from a lot of spaces, and he has reduced his attention enormously.